Srila Prabhupada ki, Bhakti Vaibhava ki, Rantara Srimad Bhagavatam, Giriraj Maharaj ki,
Jai Nitai Goprimanam.
Okay. What did we discuss last week?
We discussed about the three principles which were set by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is Namaruchi, Vaishnava Seva, and Jivadaya.
Good. Okay. Anything else?
Brahmana said did not have birthright.
Yeah, that's good. Any other points? Anything else?
You also discussed about performing karma kanda. Being in Vedas, this mention of performing karma kanda is basically to elevate the consciousness slowly and gradually. And the main advantage would be association of a brahmana who is performing that. It signifies the importance how associating with a brahmana will elevate the consciousness quite quickly.
Good. Any other points?
Brahmana is the one who is situated in spiritual consciousness. He understands what Brahman is, and Krishna is the supreme Brahma. So one understands the activities as Krishna is in Dharma Karma Samadhi. He is situated in pure transcendental consciousness.
Anything else?
Asura has also worked hard and to remove the impediments, and then they try to get their independence from God. And to deny the existence of God.
So we see in the previous chapter that Maharaj Prithu, he gave great emphasis to all the citizens in the kingdom about the necessity of worshipping Brahmanas and Vaishnavas in order to become purified and to attain Krishna consciousness. Now we see in this chapter, which we'll cover tonight, chapter 22, verses 1 to 13, we see that Maharaj Prithu is visited by the four Kumaras. And we see that he immediately shows the citizens, gives them the perfect example of how to receive a Brahman and a Vaishnava. A devotee is not someone who simply speaks philosophy, but he is someone who practices perfectly. So instead of just explaining this point, he actually exemplifies this point to all the citizens of his kingdom. So tonight we'll see how to receive a guest according to the Vedic system and the importance of honouring the guest and honouring the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas and the importance of that in terms of cultivating Krishna consciousness. Any points?
Okay, so chapter
20. The great sage Maitreya said, while the citizens were thus praying to the most powerful king, Prithu, the four Kumaras, who were as bright as the sun, arrived on the spot. Seeing the glowing effulgence of the four Kumaras, the masters of all mystic power, the king and his associates could recognize them as they descended from the sky.
The four Kumaras are described therein as Siddheshwaras, which masters of all mystic powers. One who has attained perfection in yoga, practices immediately, becomes master of all mystic perfections. He becomes smaller than the smallest. He becomes larger than the lightest. He becomes bigger than the biggest. He achieves anything from the others. He controls everything, etc. These four Kumaras, as he gave for us, has had achieved all yogic perfection, perfectional achievements, and as such they could travel in outer space without machines. While they were coming to Maharaj Prithu from other planets, they did not come by airplane, but personally. In other words, these four Kumaras were also spacemen who could travel in space without machines. The residents of the planets known as Siddhaloka can travel in outer space from one planet to another without machines. However, the special power of the Kumaras mentioned here is that whatever place they went to would immediately become sinless. During the region of Maharaj Prithu, everything on the surface of the globe was sinless, and therefore the Kumaras decided to see the king. Ordinarily, they do not go to any planet which is sinful.
Any points which are interesting here?
Srila Prabhupada mentioned the same
about. Tell those kids to go somewhere else.
Srila Prabhupada mentioned that he didn't have to go to planets. The same topic, saying how the people of previously they used to travel between planets because they had a superior body, like their body was more based on spiritual consciousness. So they could easily travel to different planets. Whereas with material facilities, they cannot travel to any other planets.
Times have changed. Any other points? Yes, sir.
Sati Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga means the perfection.
In Sati Yoga?
In Sati Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga was a means of achieving perfection. So before Kumara, that we would achieve the mystic power.
You can get them in Kali Yuga also, just by chanting Hare Krishna.
No, in that Yuga, meditation and Ashtanga Yoga was a means.
Yeah. But I'm saying you can still get those cities in this yuga also. Any other points?
If you have peace in the sadhana and perform all religious activities, then we can attract the seventy auspicious personalities from the other planets to come and visit us.
So, Prabhupada explains that for a pure devotee, automatically he is gifted by Krishna with the eight mystic cities. Therefore, the four Kumaras, they're known as Siddheshwara, or they have control of the eight mystic potencies. Prabhupada explains that when one reaches Bhava Bhakti, which is a very elevated state of Krishna consciousness, then one automatically is given by the Lord these cities. So a prema bhakta, or a pure devotee of Krishna, he automatically has these cities under his control. So we understand that Srila Prabhupada had these cities. Yeah, but the devotee may not manifest them. Whereas a yogi, he will manifest them, but the devotee, he may not manifest them if they will not assist those who are following him to attain bhakti. Just like we saw Lord Jesus, he performed many miracles. Like he would walk on water and he would pull many loaves of bread from a basket. So these are mystic cities. So he was able to do these things. But he did these things in order to invoke faith in people who had very little faith. But normally a pure devotee will not do like this. Just like Srila Prabhupada, we understand he had these cities, but he did not begin to perform miracles. He didn't walk on water or pull out loaves of bread or, you know, produce some gold or some ash or something like that. Because then that cheapens the process of bhakti. Because then people begin to follow the devotee just for some cheap reason or because they're attracted to the cities. or some, because it is a taint of material desire, and they also want to attain cities, or they're attracted by the cities. So the pure devotee may have these perfections, but he does not display them because he does not want to cheapen the process of bhakti. He wants to attract people only to give them devotional service or bhakti or an opportunity to serve Krishna. So he won't display these things even though they are there. So Prabhupada points out also in the purport that a pure devotee, he purifies everyone he comes in contact with. And that's why they travel around the universe. And we see in the Bhagavatam, what is the overwhelming I'm just trying to think of the words to explain it. We see that in the Bhagavatam, we see in the pastimes that it is explained that the way that bhakti is found in this world, or is established in this world, or is passed on, or what's the word?
Permeates,
or it is given to others. I think you understand what I'm saying.
Transmitted.
Yeah, like transmitted, like that. The way it is transmitted is through a devotee. This is how bhakti enters into the material world. Otherwise, there is no bhakti in the material world. The material world is a very dark place, and people are full of ignorance. And it's only when you come in contact with a devotee that the opportunity to receive bhakti takes place. Therefore, Krishna continuously sends his devotees into the material world. They are sent by Krishna directly from the spiritual world in order to give bhakti to others. And basically we see that the tide of Kali Yuga has changed only through the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. Because actually in the Chaitanya Mangala, it is explained by Lochan Das Thakur that Gauranga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was in Goloka Vrindavan, and he was being abhishekt, or he was being bathed by many of his associates. All the gopis were on one side, and all the queens from Dwarka were on the other side. And they were passing golden pots, and finally, Radharani and Rukmini were on either side of the Lord. And his golden form was Gauranga, and they were bathing him. There was an abhishekt ceremony going on. So he explained to all of his associates, he said, very soon all of us will go to the material world in order to spread bhakti. And he said, some of you will appear before me, and then most of you will come with me to participate in my pastimes of spreading devotional service in this material world, and then some of you will come afterwards. And then he specifically mentioned more Senapati Bhakta. He said, then one of my associates will come. And for all of those who try to flee from bhakti, from devotional service, and who cross the ocean and go to sinful lands, who leave Bharatvash and go to other places, then, he said, my Senapati Bhakta, my commander-in-chief, he will follow them, and he will give them prema bhakti with the chopping axe, or with the sword of Harinam Sankirtan, and he will kill their demoniac desires. So it is only, we know that it's Srila Prabhupada who is being predicted within those shastras by Lochan Das Thakur many hundreds of years ago. So we understand that bhakti is only transmitted in the material world through a devotee. You do not receive bhakti unless you come in contact with a devotee. When you meet a devotee, then your life changes. Then bhakti is infused within the consciousness. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. Bhakti is eternally residing in the heart, but it needs to be extracted. And it is extracted only when you have the opportunity to associate with pure devotees. So therefore the four Kumaras and Narada and Prabhupada and all of these great personalities, they travel throughout the universe. They enter the material world and travel around just to give an opportunity to pass bhakti on to others. And we are sadhakas, which means we are following in the footsteps of those great devotees, and by their instruction and guidance, then we are also trying to give others the opportunity to engage in bhakti. That is our purpose in the material world. Give as many people as possible the opportunity to receive bhakti or devotion. So any points so far?
Yeah.
There's one priest in Melbourne. His name is what's his name? I can't remember his name. My memory is not working properly tonight for some reason. I can't remember. Andy Rutherford is a good friend of his, and he saw Prabhupada in Tullamarine Airport just for a moment in the 1970s, and just by seeing Prabhupada just for that one moment. Because Prabhupada entered into the airport and the devotees were performing a huge kirtan around Prabhupada, and just for a moment the kirtan or the kirtan party separated, and just for a moment he saw Srila Prabhupada through the crowd. I think it's Ian Hunter, I think his name is, and he saw Prabhupada just for a moment, and from that time on he's been affected and has been associating with the devotees. And he, even in his church sermons, which he gives on Sunday, he quotes the Bhagavad Gita. And he chants japa in the church, in the aisle where no one's around. He chants japa, walks up and down like that. And it's just from one moment, he just saw Prabhupada once. Just for a moment, the crowd parted and he saw Prabhupada and then it, like that. And he said when he saw Srila Prabhupada, he saw that he was effulgent. He just saw Prabhupada for a moment and he saw he was effulgent, and then bhakti entered his heart. Not that he didn't have bhakti, but bhakti increased within his heart, and then he's taken up Krishna consciousness to some degree like that. I remember about the mid-90s, maybe about 10-15 years ago, I remember it was Janmashtami and we had the midnight aarti, and I was in the temple and I turned around and he was standing there looking at the deities, and then he said later on, he said, "This is not the first time that I've seen this." He was saying in previous lifetimes he is been in Vaishnava temples. Reverend Ian Hunter, he's still a priest in Melbourne. So. It's also in the song of the Vaishnava Charyas by Govinda Das. There's one bhajan which explains like that. So.
What's the possibility of great personality like Prabhupada turning up again?
There's not a lot of possibility, but Prabhupada said the self-effulgent devotees will come again. He said they will come again. Okay. Any other points?
Could you give an example of a person who has had a prediction about Prabhupada?
What's that?
You just gave an example of a person that's predicting about the saint who crossed the ocean and preach. From where you just
Chaitanya Mangala. Any other points?
So you mentioning about the siddhis for pure devotees, then I heard in Gopal Minister's Bhagavatam class from the temple, you mentioned that once Prabhupada was in a train station, he was travelling in India with his disciples. I don't know the details which train station where it was. He said like it was hot in Indian summer, and he only bought one coconut water, coconut, and Prabhupada first drank that and just passed on to the devotees, and everybody, maybe 8 to 10 devotees per person, everybody just took their turns, and still there was some water left.
Is that the case of one drop, isn't it?
Okay. Seeing the four Kumaras, Prithu Maharaj was greatly anxious to receive them. Therefore, the king, with all his officers, very hastily got up, as anxiously as a conditioned soul whose senses are immediately attracted by the modes of material nature.
In Bhagavad Gita 3.27, it is said, Praktikri Kremanam Dhimen Karmani Chagot Ahankara Vimudatma Kartaha Miti Manyate.
Manyate.
Every conditioned soul is influenced by a particular mixture of the modes of material nature. As such, the conditioned soul is attracted to certain types of activity which is forced to perform because it is completely under the influence of material nature. Here Prithu Maharaj is compared to such a conditioned soul, not because he was a conditioned soul, but because he was so anxious to reveal the Kumaras that it was as if without them he would have lost his life. The conditioned soul is attracted to the objects of sense gratification. His eyes are attracted to see beautiful things, his ears are attracted to hear nice music, his nose is attracted to enjoy the aroma of a nice flower, and his tongue is attracted to taste nice food. Similarly, all his other senses, his hands, his legs, his belly, his genital, his mind, etc., are so susceptible to the attraction of the objects of enjoyment that he cannot restrain himself. Prithu Maharaj, in the same way, could not restrain himself from retaining the four Kumaras who are bright by dint of their spiritual progress, and thus not only he himself but also his officers and associates all receive the four Kumaras. It is said, birds of a feather flock together. In this world, everyone is attracted by a person of the same category. A drunkard is attracted to persons who are also drunkards. Similarly, a saintly person is attracted by other saintly persons. Prithu Maharaj was in the topmost position of spiritual advancement, and as such, he was attracted by the Kumaras who were of the same category. It is said, therefore, that a man is known for his company.
So any points here? Good. Any other points?
So important to have the right kind of association in our life. The type of association we have, either we will degrade in our life or we will seek advancement in our life.
Based on the association, you can say, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Satsangha Pramila
Vaishnava. It is important to give the association of Mahaprabhu. One should be very eager to listen to Vaishnavas. Yeah, so Prithu Maharaj gives the example here that just like the conditioned soul becomes very eager and very enthusiastic to enjoy his senses. So he says that similarly a devotee should be have the same type of enthusiasm to associate with devotees. Rupa Goswami says just like Krishna consciousness, to give us an idea in our conditioned state, he says that pure Krishna consciousness is like when a young man and a young girl are attracted to each other. So it is not something which is intellectualized. They don't think, am I attracted to this girl? Am I attracted to this boy? They just think about the boy and the girl all the time. They think about each other all the time, spontaneously. So he said, when will my attraction to Krishna become like that? That is Krishna consciousness. When you're actually attracted to Krishna spontaneously. You cannot stop thinking of Krishna. So, the Bhagavatam teaches us that in order to become purified, the conditioned soul must replace the attachment that he has in material relationships to attachment to saintly persons. And the Bhagavatam says this is Mukta Dwaram. This is the gateway to liberation. That same attachment that you have to material personalities, that must be replaced with attachment to sadhus. And by becoming attached to sadhus, then you will transcend material energy by their mercy. But if you do not become attached to saintly personalities, then you will stay in this material world. So this is the way to become purified in Krishna consciousness. And that's how we develop an eagerness. By their association, we also become eager. So first of all, you must become eager to associate with sadhus and to hear the transcendental narrations which emanate from their lotus mouth. And by that association, then we become released from the clutches of the material energy. Otherwise, you will not become released. You will remain attached in this material world. So, any points here?
So I was just hearing a lecture from Guru Maharaj, and Guru Maharaj was discussing the same thing. He was saying that devotional service is very simple, but we make it complicated because of our attachment to the material world.
Anything else?
On the same point, Prabhupada said devotional service is simple but not easy.
Simple but not simple. When the great sages accepted their reception according to the instructions of the Shastras and finally took their seats offered by the king, influenced by the glories of the sages, immediately bowed down. Thus he worshipped the four Kumaras.
The four Kumaras are Parampara spiritual masters of the Vaishnava Sampradaya. Out of the four Sampradayas, namely Brahma Sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya, Kumar Sampradaya, and Rudra Sampradaya, the disciplic succession of spiritual master to disciple known as the Kumar Sampradaya is coming down from the four Kumaras. So Pitu Maharaj was very respectful to the Sampradaya Acharyas. As it is said by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sakshat Daritvena Samasta Sapatri, a spiritual master or the Parampara Acharya should be respected exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word Vidhiva is significant in this verse. This means that Pritu Maharaj also strictly followed the injunctions of the Shastras in receiving a spiritual master or Acharya of the transcendental discrete succession. Whenever an Acharya is sent, one should immediately bow down before him. Pritu Maharaj did this properly. Therefore, the words used here are Prashrayanta Kandhara. Out of humility, he bowed down before the Kumaras.
So what points do we extract from this report?
Just a point I wanted to have you guys clarify. Vedivyas appear in our parampara. Brahma, Madhava, Maharaj, and Sankara. And we have all the Vedivyas, which are also followed by the other three Sampradayas. Does that make the weight of Sampradaya higher in presence?
No. Our Sampradaya is unique only at the point of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so that's when it becomes specifically unique. At that point, okay. All the sampradayas have a similar mood, and I mean they all have differences, but they're all similar. But it's when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears, or when Madhavendra Puri appears, that's when it becomes unique. At that point, anything else?
This sampradaya, where are they staying, and who are the disciples of Rudra sampradaya? We are not heard about that.
I don't know a lot about them specifically.
And would they stay in India probably?
Definitely in India, yeah.
We have not had any people from Rudra Sampradaya.
Well,
you know, the
Rudra
Sampradaya, it belongs to
Lakshmi. Yeah, it belongs to Lakshmi. He's the founder. Yeah, it is there.
Because all Rudra, they belong to Shiva.
Yeah. I don't know any details about
it.
Balaba.
Vishnu
Swami comes. That's the Rudra Sampradaya. It's for Vishnu Swami then.
And then this Balaba Sampradaya, which in Gujarat and all this Srinathji. I think that comes from Rudra.
Further back. Could be, yeah. Balaba Acharya, he developed a new mood within his Sampradaya. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu developed a fresh mood within the Madhava Sampradaya. So Balabhajari also, he developed a new mood also.
So in that case, doesn't Vedas become the conduit through which the transcendental knowledge is going to the other systems?
Is he connected to that? Yeah, in the sense that everyone uses the Vedas as the authority. So in that sense, he may specifically come for a particular... Just like Narada, everyone quotes Narada in all the sampradayas. Just like, you know, Prabhupada would quote Ramanujacharya. Right, so we quote from all the authorities, receiving us all. We're just... everyone is a cousin, that's the point. So the world's different. We're all Vaishnavas, that's the point. We just have our particular lineage, which makes us, our flavour, unique. That's the only difference. It's not that we're... it's not that we're different. We don't see, like Prabhupada, have respect for, you know, all the sampradayas. And in developing the temple of the Vedic planetarium in Mayapur, then he specifically asked the devotees to go to South India and speak to the Ramanuj sampradaya and like that. So, and we don't have to have all these differences. These days in Kali Yuga, it's all different. And even amongst the Gaudiyas, we say, oh, there's this one, but the mood should not be like that. That's the point.
In their perspective, and for example, Sri Sampradaya, they worship more Lakshmi Narayan, they don't say Krishna does not exist. But they emphasize a particular point for whatever faith they have, Rasa, whatever they have.
Yeah, they say that Krishna is an incarnation of Narayan. That's what they say. We say Narayan is an incarnation of Krishna. And so you just take your pick, whichever you prefer. Okay. So, as it is mentioned here, Prabhupada explains that one should respectfully and humbly bow down before the Acharya. As Rupa Goswami says, Guru Pad Ashraya, adore. Spiritual life begins when we see the Acharya in the correct position, when we have the correct attitude. When one offers respect to the guru, this is when one's spiritual life will rapidly begin to progress. Because spiritual life is based upon respecting Krishna's representative. Like that is how we see the Acharya. That's how we see the spiritual master, the guru. We see that he is Krishna's representative, and therefore he's offered all respect. Just like Prabhupada would sometimes come to the airports and the reporters would come and interview him, and he would have many dozens of disciples all bowing down to him right in front of everyone in the airport. Dozens of people bowing down before Prabhupada. And then the reporters would sometimes ask Prabhupada to explain what this means. And Prabhupada said, I'm like a tax collector. On behalf of the king, then I go out and the tax collector collects the taxes and then he passes them back to the king. So he said, I'm like a tax collector. Now, I go and collect obeisances and then I offer them to Krishna. So he's Krishna's representative. Just like in Prabhupada's time when he grew up in India, in British India, then they had the Viceroy of the Queen of England, Queen Victoria. So she had a representative who would stay in India on her behalf. So when he came, practically he was given all the respect of the Queen of England. Although it's not the queen, it's not the actual royal family, but he's given all the respect. So Prabhupada would give this example. The guru is given the same respect as Krishna. Whenever the guru comes, we give the same respect that we would give Krishna. Why? Because he's Krishna's representative. Yeah? So then Prithu Maharaj is teaching us this essential Vedic point. And it's an essential point in bhakti. Yeah? That one must give all respect to Krishna's representatives. And just like His Holiness Devamrita Swami is upstairs, he's only staying overnight, okay. But when we see him, we give him more respect, because he's Krishna's representative. And we should see all devotees like that. We give all respect to all devotees. Especially to the advanced devotees, the sannyasis, but we give respect to all the devotees. See, these are Krishna's representatives. Prabhupada explains this in a few chapters ago. He says that all the devotees are in the Achutya Gotra. They're part of Krishna's family. So when any part of the family comes, then you offer them respect. You offer them all facility. Just like if some relative comes to your home, even it might be a second cousin or a third cousin or something, but you give them all respect and facility because they're a part of the family. So similarly, all the devotees we respect as part of the family, they're Krishna's representatives, and especially the guru, especially the spiritual master. Any points?
What is the lecture yesterday, and Prabhupada mentions in the purport, once a disciple is given the orders by spiritual master, he should accept them without duplicity, without argument, and without resistful faith. If you don't do this, then if you reject, immediately the disciple falls down.
Any other points? After this, the king took the water which had washed the lotus feet of the Kumaras and sprinkled it over his hair. By such respectful actions, the king, as an exemplary personality, showed how to receive a spiritually advanced personality. Sri Devi, can you read the...
श्री चैतन्य महाप्रभु ने अपनी आचार्य प्रभु जीवेर इट इज वेरी वेल नोन दैट व्हाटएवर श्री चैतन्य महाप्रभु टॉट इन हिज लाइफ एज आचार्य ही हिमसेल्फ प्रैक्टिस व्हेन ही वाज प्रीचिंग एज अ डिवोटी ऑल्दो ही वाज डिटेक्टेड बाय सेवरल ग्रेट पर्सनालिटीज to be the incarnation of Krishna. He never agreed to be addressed as an incarnation. Even though one may be an incarnation of Krishna or especially empowered by him, he should not advertise that he is an incarnation. People will automatically accept the real truth in due course of time. Prithu Maharaj was the ideal Vaishnava king. Therefore, he taught others by his personal behavior how to receive and respect saintly persons like the Kumaras. When a saintly person comes to one's home, it is the Vedic custom first to wash his feet with water and then sprinkle this water over the head of oneself and one's family. Prithu Maharaj did this for he was an exemplary teacher of the people in general.
So any interesting points here?
Says how to receive the guest properly. So it was for his friendly character.
So can we do the same with like all the guests come to our home?
If they let you do it. At least the senior devotees, they might let you do it. Like the sannyasis and the gurus, they might let you do it. Even sometimes, even like Guru Jumping, sometimes devotees want to do it in system. So if they let you do it, then you can do it. Any other points?
Not sure if you mentioned this in class or I heard in the lecture somewhere. Then, Bhaktisiddhanta Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he travels, and if you do this overnight, so whenever the train stops, practically people know that he's coming, and they used to come there, and Maharaj will come on the doorsteps, and then this class started there, then and there. The train driver comes out, he also attends the class, and the train gets late, and just by his 5 minutes of whatever the train stops there, he could virtually bring the whole village at the point of first initiation. And this is all the way to the destination.
That's why I need all the trains always late. Must be devotees traveling all over. I didn't say that, but I think it's in the pastimes of Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Bhakti. The Bhakti Vikas Swami wrote some new pastimes. Or brought some new pastimes in some books. Any other points?
Generally says action speaks louder than the words. So Maharaj is doing himself.
As it's been taught here in the Bhagavatam, no matter how prominent one becomes, no matter how prominent any devotee becomes, he should always offer respect to his superiors. And we see examples there, such as Indra failing to respect Brihaspati, and what was the result? And it became a pig. It was cursed by Brihaspati. You will not respect your guru, then you become a pig. Take birth. Okay. So, this is the culture. Then, no matter how prominent you become, you always offer respect to the superiors. This is Vaishnava culture. Now we see, Prabhupada's explained in the last few chapters, that if you look in later in the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, you see that Krishna himself, when Yudhishthira performed the Rajasuya sacrifice, he personally bathed the feet of every guest who came to the sacrifice. Right? So this is the position of a devotee. He always takes the humble position.
And he went
to bathe
Sudama as well.
Yeah, Sudama Vipra. Yeah, he was bathing his feet. So this is the etiquette which is shown. Particularly, it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that three substances are very potent coming from the Vaishnavas. So therefore, we take the dust from the Vaishnava's feet. We take the water which has washed the Vaishnava's feet. And we take the remnants of the prasad which are left by the Vaishnavas. Now these three have great potency, which is difficult to reconcile. But by taking these three, it will greatly enhance your bhakti. So devotees are always eager to take these three. To take the dust from the lotus feet of the devotees, to take the water which has washed their lotus feet, and to take the remnants of their prasad. You see in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates, sometimes when they would meet, they would try to take the dust from each other's feet. Just like Pundarik Vijayaniti, who was a very powerful devotee. He said he's very big and very powerful and strong. He was an incarnation of Vrishabhanu Maharaj, Srimati Radharani's father. So when Pundarik Vijayaniti would come to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then Swarup Damodar, who was Mahaprabhu's secretary, who was also very powerful, they would try to take the dust from each other's feet. And they would end up having a wrestling match. Because both of them were trying to take the dust, and because they're both very strong, they would wrestle with each other. And they'd both be trying to get the dust, but they wouldn't. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be laughing. Because they'd be rolling around trying to get the dust off each other's feet, and they'd be wrestling each other to get the dust, like that. So this is the etiquette. Devotees, they try to get the dust from each other's feet. Just like Tamal Krishna Maharaj was speaking in Mayapur at the yoga pit. And he was on the stage, and there was about 20 sannyasis sitting behind him. And he was speaking to all the devotees. And he was saying that, he was encouraging everyone. He said, you should try to get the dust from the lotus feet of the devotees while we're doing this Navadvipa Mandala Parikrama. And then all the sannyasis were sitting behind, and they all started taking the dust off each other's feet. All of them were throwing it, and there was a big commotion on the stage behind it, because they're all trying to take the dust off their feet. So this is the Vaishnava move, because it's very these three substances, they have great potency to give bhakti into one's heart. So one should try to get these. There's descriptions in Chaitanya Charitamrita. One of the devotees, what was his name? Was it Kala Krishna Das, I think it was. And he would buy first class mangoes, and he would go to the devotees into their house and say, please offer this to your deity. So devotees would take the mangoes, they'd offer it to the deity, and then they would take the Mahaprasad, and then they'd throw the skins outside like that, and then he would go around the back of the house, and he would take the skin, and then he would take the remnants. And he said he took the remnants of every devotee in Bengal. And take the remnants. And then there's also an example, it might have been the same devotee, he was in Jagannath Puri, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go to the Simadwara, and before he'd enter in to see Jagannath, he would bathe his, Swarup Damodar would come and bathe his feet near the entranceway of the temple. And that devotee, he came and he put his hand underneath and he took the water in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not normally let that happen. Because devotees do not like other devotees to take their remnants, right? Or to take the dust from their feet, or to take... So Mahaprabhu was in the mood of a devotee, he did not like it. But for that devotee, he let him take three times. But then when he went to go a fourth time, he said, I got it tonight. He said, you have enough mercy. Yeah, because he was pleased by his attitude, taking the remnants of all the devotees, and then he let him take the... That is the mood of the devotee. Like that. So, when we display this kind of humility to the devotees, then what is the result? The devotees give us their kripa. They give us mercy. So therefore, we must show a humble attitude, always. This is how spiritual life opens up. When you become humble before the devotees, then spiritual life opens. Right? Otherwise, it's very difficult to advance in Christian consciousness if you don't show humility to the devotees. If your false ego is always getting in the way from you becoming humble, it's very difficult for you to advance in Christian consciousness. But when you become very humble, very respectful, then you'll make so much advancement at that. Now, what is the mercy the devotees give? They give Divya Gyan. They give transcendental instruction. They will speak and they will enlighten you about Krishna consciousness. Just like when the devotee sees, oh, this devotee is so nice, has such a nice attitude, they will give you instructions which will help you to advance in Krishna consciousness.
If they don't give the word, it's not that if you please someone, it says actually when you please someone in their heart, you get their good quality, you just get them in the heart, and it's really like that. When I got initiated, I was always thinking, because I always studied and always got knowledge externally, and I was thinking how get this knowledge from the heart, manifested in the heart, it never, you know, that was for me something incomprehensible, because I always learned from the book something, always something from externally. And then when I got initiated, it says that all this knowledge descends in the heart, and for 1 month I was going on Srimad Bhagavatam classes, but I was doing so much service and I was doing whatever my Guru Maharaj has told me, and I didn't listen to any lecture, and then all things were coming, oh, this is like this, this is like this, this is like this. And then after 6 months I got the tape from my Guru Maharaj, and then I started listening exactly the words I was realizing, you know, this is like this, this is like that, exactly with the same words I was listening on the tape. And I think that Krishna was telling me how that knowledge descends in the heart. Once we do, we follow the instructions and we try to please the others, we actually get the quality from the other people when we please them.
Yeah. And Krishna says, Tesham Satta Yukdanam Bhajitam Priti Purvakam Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tant.
Sometimes we have seen like our Arjuna also used to wrestle for this self sovereignty Kona thing.
Used to what?
Sometimes we see like our devotees also some wrestling going on for just for the people. So is it Kona fight or?
Yeah, I don't know. What happens in Bhakti Bhavan is a different thing. Yeah, it's Kona fight. But, yeah, because I was in the Brahmachari Ashram one time, we were taking prasadam, and then Koti was there, and Nityananda Priya, and a few of the other boys from Bhakti Bhavan, and then they decided to, you know, to start taking the dust from everyone's feet, like that. So, you know, it's not easy to do it like that, but even with me, like about four of them grabbed me and like picked me up and like that. I'm quite strong, but I couldn't stop them. They all grabbed me and they just... Yeah, you know, Cody's strong as well when he gets you. As in, they just grab the feet and then everyone was taking it and then you can't do anything about it. Okay. So it's good from their side. From our side, it's not very good. If they try to do it, then you should try to run as fast as you can.
Boy, stealing the dust off your feet, do they still also steal the potency?
Depends if the devotee has any potency. The devotee doesn't feel like he has any potency, so he doesn't like devotees to take. The devotee never feels himself advanced, so he doesn't like other devotees to do it. But if the devotee is advanced, then you will get it. Okay. The four great sages were elder to Lord Shiva, and when they were seated on the golden throne, they appeared just like fire blazing on an altar. Maharaj Prithu, out of his great gentleness and respect for them, began to speak with great restraint as follows. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, why were the Kumaras so effulgent, so powerful? Prabhupada gives two reasons. One, he says they're naishtika, they're pure brahmachari. The other is they're pure devotee, like that. But Prabhupada explains in the purport that it is highly improper to disobey the order of the guru. A devotee can never disobey the order of the spiritual master. But Prabhupada says in the 8th canto, he says there's one order that you can disobey, and that is if you're a brahmachari and the guru says get married, and if you do not want to get married, then you may disobey that. Prabhupada says that is the one exception to disobeying the order of the guru. So the Kumaras, they were ordered to get married by Brahma, who is the guru and the father, but they refused. But there was no reaction. Anything else, you'll get reaction if you disobey, but there was no reaction in that. King Prithu spoke, "My dear great sages, auspiciousness personified, it is very difficult for even the mystic yogis to see you. Indeed, you are very rarely seen. I do not know what kind of pious activities I performed for you to grace me by appearing before me without difficulty." So, when we begin to perform bhakti or devotional service, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, then all sorts of uncommon events begin to take place. And the more you surrender to Krishna, the more Krishna makes arrangements for you to advance in Krishna consciousness. So we see so many extraordinary things happen as devotees. Just like I got an email from Shyam Vallabha Prabhu. He just got back from India. He went to the Holy Gums for the first time. And he wrote me an email. I haven't spoken to him yet. But he said, everywhere I went, something happened. He said, I went to Mayapur, and some devotee came and then took me on Paragraha. He said, I went to Puri, walking down the beach. Some devotee came up and said, oh, are you a devotee? He said, yes. And then he said, okay, I'll take you on Paragraha. And then he went to Vrindavan, and then someone came and said, I'll take you on Paragraha. So this is what takes place when you're a devotee. If you're surrendering to Krishna, then there will be so many uncommon things will take place. Extraordinary things will take place. The more we surrender, then the more that takes place. Krishna is just testing. If you have faith in him, then, and if you surrender to him, then he will make all the arrangements. Because we are a little faithless, because we are a little neophyte, then we don't fully trust Krishna. So therefore we think, oh, I have to make this arrangement, I have to make that arrangement. But the devotee just understands that I will surrender to Krishna and he will take care of everything for me. Just like sometimes as devotees we go somewhere, just like I remember 2001, the last time Swami Krishnamurti came to Australia. So then we went up to Moolambar to spend some time with him, and I was going up on the plane, and my wife, because women, they like to have some security, so she said, where are we going to stay, where are we going to stay, what's going to happen when we get there? And I said, Krishna will take care of us. That women don't like to always hear this. Husbands always give this answer, but the wives don't always like to hear it. We always say, Krishna will take care of us. And the wife says, yeah, but where are we going to go? But then when we got there, Krishna took care of us. And we got to the farm, and then one of my godbrothers, Nisrimadeva Prabhu, he said, do you have anywhere to stay? I said, no, we haven't organized. He said, come and stay at my house. Okay. So I turned to my wife and said, see. Yeah, no problem. So devotee, we feel like this, that Krishna will take care of everything for us. That is the mood of surrender. The more you surrender, the more Krishna will take care of everything. We don't have that anxiety. Any person upon whom the Brahmana and Vaishnavas are pleased can achieve anything which is very rare to obtain in this world, as well as after death. Not only that, but one also receives the favour of the auspicious Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, who accompany the Brahmanas and
the Vaishnavas.
So, Govinda Dasi explains, or actually, Narottama Das Thakur explains in his bhajan. He says that the devotees are within Krishna's heart, and Krishna is in the heart of the devotees. Wherever the devotees are gathered, then Krishna is present, because Krishna is within the devotee's heart. So therefore, as soon as you come and you begin to associate with devotees, just like you have a very advanced devotee present. Just like we're so fortunate in Melbourne, so many advanced devotees come and give us their association. So when we go into their presence, then Krishna manifests, because he's in their heart. He's manifest. So then you can experience, in their association, you can experience Krishna's association. That's how ISKCON began. Prabhupada was a pure devotee, and by his association, Krishna was there. Everyone could feel Krishna was there in Prabhupada's association. So then automatically everyone feels that it is Vaikuntha. When you're in the association of advanced devotees, you feel it is like Vaikuntha, because Krishna is there. It is the spiritual world. The holy Dham descends at that place. That is the potency of the pure devotee. Wherever he is, it feels like you're in the holy Dham. So Krishna is within the heart of the devotee, and the devotee is within the heart of Krishna. Krishna is always thinking of his devotees, so therefore they are always within his heart. As we heard in the previous chapter, that the Lord Vishnu said that I am purified by the association of my devotees, by Brahmanas, by Vaishnavas. I feel I am purified. So that is the potency, that is the reciprocation. So Prabhupada points out that Yasha Prasadat Bhagavat Prasado Yasha Prasadam Na Kiti Katopi. You will not make any advancement if you don't please the devotees. When the devotees are pleased with you, then you make advancement. If the devotees are not pleased, you don't make advancement. That's how we advance. Right? You understand that someone is advanced in Krishna consciousness, that means he has received the blessings of his guru and the Vaishnavas. If the guru and the Vaishnavas are not pleased upon you, then how can you advance? You will not advance. If we're struggling in our spirit, sometimes you feel like you're struggling in your spiritual life. I'm not looking just at one person. I'm just generically. Sometimes you feel like you're struggling. Right? The reason we're struggling is because we're not connected deeply enough to our guru and to the Vaishnavas. Because when you're receiving their mercy, when you're actually in their association, how can you be struggling? And the struggles are there. But I was reading, every day we turn over the calendar. You have that little calendar with Prabhupada saying every day. What's the date today? April 19, is it? Like that. So I turned over this morning, and then Prabhupada said today. He said, devotional service, I can't remember exactly his wording, but he said devotional service does not stop. He said in the material world there will always be suffering. But he said devotional service does not stop. It goes on at all times. That's what it means. So when we have that connection to the Vaishnavas and to the spiritual master, we do not feel the suffering in the material world. And that's how you receive their mercy, by being in their association. And then you always remain enlightened. Just like at New Nandagram, then I don't have so much association. There's not so many advanced devotees to associate with. So what do? Every day I put on the lectures. And then I listen to advanced devotees. And I get their association. And that's how I remain, some enlightenment comes. And then when it's too much for me, then I drive up to Melbourne and I get all of your association. And then I feel lifted up again. So this is how we get association. If we are sincere, then we will always be in the association of the guru and the devotees. Any points?
Yesterday we had a fortune of having Harayana Mataji. She came down for much better than yesterday. Sharing about her personal life. She has lived in Melbourne for the last 3-4 days, all the seminars. she lives alone in Vrindavan. She was saying that her son is probably in the US, and apparently in the recession her son lost everything, his house, job, everything. And finally he had to, he's in a situation where he had to live in a car. So he used to sleep in his car. And eventually he couldn't afford that, and now he's on a bike, just outside. So very recently, you know, he started, they moved in into a small house. So I was just wondering that if my son were to be in such a state in a faraway country, then my faith in Krishna would at least a little bit shake, saying that, okay, I'm involved in serving you in Vrindavan, I'm traveling all over the world. She served Prabhupada right from the days in Jhu. She told me the rats used to fall in, they used to eat prasadam from everywhere. And she got bitten by monkeys and so many things. She has undergone untold miseries in her life, but kept serving Srila Prabhupada's mission. But on the opposite side, her son is suffering like this. But still she is very steady in her determination. Her faith has not shaken even an inch. She just continues from strength to strength. So there is so much learning from her. She is hearing from her.
You didn't go to work?
Yesterday?
Sunday.
No, yesterday. Oh, yesterday,
Sunday. These sufferings actually, they are because of karma only. So if you believe in karma, that means the sufferings, they have come through that only. If somebody is suffering because of the previous karma, you know, in this stage you are not doing any bad thing, but the previous karmas are bad. That's why you are suffering.
It's easy to say that, but when it happens to you, then...
Yeah.
I say it all the time when I give class, but then when it happens to me, it's a little bit different. Anyway, teacher, if you ever get in the if you're in another country and you don't have anywhere to live, right? You ring me up, I'll send you a ticket, and you can come and live with me at the farm. Okay? Okay? Just remember, I said that. Don't worry about anything. You're in ISKCON now. There's no anxiety. If you're outside of this country, you've got anxiety. I don't have anxiety. Like,
actually, she told me the same thing.
Yeah.
She told me to be honest.
Yeah. If you're in this country, you don't have anxiety. Like, I was in New Zealand, right? One of the most remote places on earth, right? Like, our car drove off the road in the middle of nowhere. Like, you couldn't have chosen a more, you know, ridiculous place to drive off a road. You know, out in the middle of nowhere, 6:30 at night. Right? I mean, four cars went past after and that in the next 2 hours, like that. And then I woke up in a hospital and I didn't have any anxiety. Because I thought, you know, all of you are there, so what's the problem? I just come back to Melbourne, everyone was ringing me up saying, come back, we'll look after you. So I just said, I didn't have any anxiety. And when you're in ISKCON, you don't have any anxiety. If you're outside of ISKCON, then your life's full of anxiety. Okay. So we're very lucky. Have you got my phone number? You haven't got it? Come and see me after class, okay? Okay. Prithu Maharaj continued, although you are travelling in all planetary systems, people cannot know you, just as they cannot know the Super Soul. Although he is within everyone's heart as the witness of everything, even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva cannot understand the Super Soul. A person who is not very rich and is attached to family life becomes highly glorified when saintly persons are present in his home. The master and servants who are engaged in offering the exalted visitors water, a sitting place and paraphernalia for reception are glorified, and the home itself is also glorified.
And spiritually, when man is too attached to family life, he is also not glorious. But saintly persons are quite ready to visit the house of a poor man or a man who is attached to material family life. When this happens, the owner of the house and his servants are glorified because they offer water for washing the feet of the saintly person, sitting places and other things to receive him. The conclusion is that if a saintly person goes to the house of even an unimportant man, such a person becomes glorious by his presence. It is therefore the Vedic instead, the householder invites a saintly person in his home to receive his blessings. This system is still current in India, and therefore saintly persons, wherever they go, are posted by the householders, who in turn get an opportunity to receive transcendental knowledge. It is the duty of a sannyasi, therefore, to travel everywhere just to favor the householders, who are generally ignorant of the values of spiritual life.
You made the next paragraph also.
It may be argued that all householders are not very rich, and that one cannot receive great saintly persons or teachers because they are always accompanied by their disciples. If a householder is to receive a saintly person, he has to receive his entourage also. It is said in the Shastra that Durvasa Muni was always accompanied by 60,000 disciples, and that if there was a little discrepancy in their reception, he would be very angry and would sometimes curse the host. The fact is that every householder, regardless of his position or economic condition, can at least receive saintly guests with great devotion and offer them drinking water, for drinking water is available always. In India, the custom is that even an ordinary person is offered a glass of water if he suddenly visits and one cannot offer him foodstuff. If there is no water, then one can offer a sitting place, even if it is on straw mats. And if one has no straw mat, he can immediately clean the ground and ask the guest to sit there. Supposing that a householder cannot even do that, then with folded hands, he can simply receive the guest saying, "Welcome." And if he cannot do that, then he should feel very sorry for his poor condition and shed tears and simply offer obeisances with his whole family, wife and children. In this way, he can satisfy any guest, even if the guest is a saintly person or a king.
So what are the points in this purport? Yes.
Today, in the last summer, I went to my neighbor's house near Mangangatan, and small Shubham got a crate and he said, "Sit, sit, sit." And he was so cute with a big smile, and I was thinking, "Oh my goodness, this boy is really special." And I was thinking when they were mentioning it, I was thinking of Radhanaswami when he was chased by the dogs. And they were, I think, they were sick from rabies. They were really wild and angry. And suddenly he entered through someone's door in the house, and the household, it was actually only one room. And the householder first got frightened from them, but then they realized his condition, what it was. And they immediately made a space and they started making food, was it? Chapatis or something like that in the middle of the night. Although he came so much unexpectedly and almost from nowhere, no time.
Devakinandan Prabhu, when he was here in Srimad Bhagavatam class, he was saying that Vedic culture has deteriorated. He was saying that in Vedic culture it is mentioned Atithi Devo Bhava. The guest should be treated as good as God. But nowadays they have put bolts. Beware of dog. The way one.
The Prabhupada mentions in these purports too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, exactly that same point. So, if a saintly person goes to the house of a grihastha, it is just to enlighten them. It's not that the saintly person is in any need of anything from the grihastha. Simply he comes to the grihastha's house because he wants to give them some spiritual enlightenment. So it is our duty to receive the saintly person to the best of our ability, as Prabhupada says in the purport. You must give them everything according to your ability and to the facility that you have, then you should offer them the best of everything. That is Vedic culture. You give the guest the best of everything that you have, like that. And in that way, you receive them and you receive Krishna's blessings. But if you do not receive them properly, as we see in the next couple of purports, Prabhupada explains, then your spiritual life will become ruined. Like that. So Prabhupada says we'll read the next verse and then Prabhupada will explain the opposite point. On the contrary, even though full of all opulence and material prosperity, any householder's house where the devotees of the Lord are never allowed to come in, and where there is no water for washing their feet is to be considered a tree in which all venomous serpents live. So if we do not receive the saintly person properly, it is simply out of envy. Prabhupada explains that in the material culture, that when someone very saintly comes to your home and you don't receive them properly, that is simply envy. Because an envious person, they want to keep their material facilities simply for their enjoyment. But in Vedic culture, or in a civilized culture, if someone very qualified comes to your home, then you offer everything to them. Just like we see in the pastimes of Lord Nityananda, then when the Brahmana came to the house of Hadaya Pandit, he said, "You can take anything you want. Everything in my home is yours." That is the Vedic culture. And then the next morning, the Brahmana said, "Then please give me your son as a companion for my travels." And then he had to give. That is the culture. That is the situation. So this is the proper way to receive the guest. If someone comes to your home, you offer everything to them. You think that when the saintly person comes, the saintly person, by coming to your house, he makes that place a place of pilgrimage. It becomes purified by their presence. And everything in your house, all your facility, it belongs to them. It doesn't belong to you. It is theirs. So you should offer it in your heart. Krishna says in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that giving charity purifies even great souls. We see this point. I know for myself that you go to Vrindavan in the month of Kartik, and then you give charity, and the potency and the purification is so great of giving. Nothing belongs to us. Everything belongs to Krishna ultimately. So we should give it in the service of Krishna and Krishna's devotees, and this purifies the consciousness. Only an envious person does not give, because he is envious. He's thinking, "No, everything is for my pleasure. Everything is for my enjoyment. This home is for mine. Don't come into my home." And that's what people are like. "Don't come into my home." But there's a pastime in the Leelamrita. Prabhupada is going for a walk in Vrindavan. He's walking across one of the fields, and the farmer who owns the land, then he is very respectful because he sees Prabhupada walking across his field. And Prabhupada said, "This is Vedic culture. A saintly person is walking across his land. He feels like this is a blessing. This is an auspicious omen." He said, "In the West, they will chase you off the land." Someone's walking across your farm and they come out with a gun. "Get off the farm. Get off my land." That's what it's like in the West. Did it ever happen to you, Sheil? It didn't happen? No? That's what it's like in the Western world. You walk across someone's land and they become very angry. "Why are you coming?" Actually, I was having lunch today with Manigriga Prabhu at the farm. He was telling me stories. Manigriga is he's an amazing personality. He said he went into one house selling books. Manigriga is so strong. He's at the farm. You see the snake? Me and him were walking down the road and there was a he said, "There's a snake." And I said, "Oh, like that." He walked over, he picked it up on the tail. He's just I'm just thinking, "My God." That's what Manigriga was like. So he said he was on book distribution. He walked into one house in New Zealand and there was a sign on the fence that said, "Beware of the dog." So he walked in the house and it was like a big German shepherd, like big dog. And Manigriga walked in that way. So Manigriga went, "Oh." The dog ran around the back of the house. And then he knocked on the door, and then the guy opened the door, and the guy said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "Didn't you see the sign? Beware of the dog, it's dangerous." And he said, "Yeah, I chased your dog." He ran around the back of the house. So in the Western culture, then someone comes to your home, and you think, "Oh, that's an inconvenience." But in the Vedic culture, if someone comes to your home, then it's a great opportunity to do some service. Especially if a saintly person comes, you give everything to that person. And that's how you receive that person. That's how you make advancement in spiritual life. He didn't tell me that part. He didn't tell me. Money comes out with all sorts of stories. It is what it is. one of the houses also good,
trespassers will be prosecuted.
Yeah. Just like I was at the farm a few weeks ago and I cooked lunch and then I said like 1:30 lunch is ready, then Manugriva came at 2 o'clock and I said, where were you? He said, I was in the field, I was picking the zucchinis, and he said, I picked one zucchini, put it in the basket and looked down and there was a big snake there. And he said, I tried to get it because, you know, to get it out of the garden. And he said, it took me half an hour to, I was chasing it around the garden. I said, man, you're a creep. That's what he's like, you know. So I was just walking down the road and just picked up a snake and goes like this on him. That's what he's like. And when he's there, there's no fear. He's fearless. My group is fearless. Maharaj Prithu offered his welcome to the four Kumaras, addressing them as the best of the Brahmanas. He welcomed them, saying, from the beginning of your birth, you strictly observe vow of celibacy. And although you are experienced in the path of liberation, you are keeping yourselves just like small children. So, Prabhupada explains, why do we offer our obeisances to the sannyasi? Because he has conquered sex life. And that is the most difficult thing to conquer in this material world. The desire to enjoy with the opposite sex. Therefore, Prabhupada said, you must offer obeisances to the sannyasi. If you see a sannyasi, if you do not offer obeisances, you lose your pious credits. Your piety diminishes like that. So therefore, whenever we see a sannyasi, we immediately offer obeisances. And we get blessed by offering obeisances. Very difficult to conquer sex a lot, to conquer attraction to the opposite sex. And the final verse, Prithu Maharaj inquired from the sages about persons entangled in this dangerous material existence because of their previous actions. Could such persons, whose only aim is sense gratification, be blessed with any good fortune? So Prabhupada points out in the purport that he is speaking about the attached householders, griha medhi. I mean someone who is too attached to this material world, like that. So Prabhupada says that as grihasthas, because most of us are grihasthas, he said we should voluntarily simplify our existence. Grihasthas should make their life more simple, voluntarily, like that. Do not complicate things. Do not become overly attached. Because it is Maya's trap. Most of the people in this world, they're too much attached to their material griha. You see all the people in Albert Park, so attached. They work like dogs, practically, just so that they can buy a little, you know, a little box in Albert Park. They work so hard just so they can own this little box. Like that. And then they become materially entangled. It's very difficult to get out of the material world. So devotees, we should simplify things. Don't increase your material attachments too much. Like that. Especially as grihasthas. Because grihastha life means, automatically, things expand. But as devotees, we should be intelligent. We should not let things expand so that we become more and more attached, but decrease it naturally. So we'll stop there and tomorrow night we'll continue with chapter 22. Next week, this weekend we're having the retreat at New Nandagram with Burajan Prabhu. So we won't have any classes next week because the retreat finishes on Monday, so we can't have any class. And from previous experience I realise I'm very tired, so it'd probably be hard to give class on Tuesday. There's going to be a lot of work and I think all of you will be quite tired as well. So no class next week, and then the week after we'll resume like that. At the end of chapter 23 we'll have our exam, which hopefully will not be too far away. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.